Salutations, everyone. Once again, this is ATS. My name is Roy. I'm the control operator for this, the Lymar Tactical Net. The Lymar Tactical Net has been going strong for more than 42 years, mostly under the care of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key more than 2 years ago. And so in his memory, we continue Tactical Net and hopefully provide information and learn things and entertain each other and have fun. Because if you're not having fun, you're doing this hobby all wrong. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the U-link. Okay. You need to reach me. You can't do it via the radio. Email is as good as any other method. That would be either for mailbag questions, questions that you would normally ask during a technical net, but you would be available at the radio at the time, and we would discuss it, and you could either listen in through one of many methods, or we have archive files of audio tapes and such that you can just download the file that you want and listen to a particular episode of the technical method. Other possibility is if you have a topic of interest. Some people have a topic where they would like to present it to the group. That's great. Others want to present a topic for discussion that they will plan to join in on. And others just want to hear about a topic. They don't really know that much about it, but they would like other people talking about the topic. Puzzles. Puzzles are very nice. I'm always looking for puzzles. Unfortunately, tonight I do not have any in my back pocket. I had two last week. They are rare gems, and I always try to find them. These are questions of a technical nature that preferably can be Googled within, 10 seconds. Eventually, someone just Googles it, tells everyone what they found, and it's over. Or if you have a question that's NASA space related, you want Paul to comment on it, you can either ask me and I'll pass it on to Paul, or you can email him directly. That would be spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address, though, for all of the previously stated things, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Let me drop for a second and I will continue. Okay. I make up a link page. It's a bunch of YouTubes and articles and all kinds of things that I found fascinating in the past week. In the old days, we used to discuss a bunch of them, but we usually don't get the time to do that anymore. But I still provide them for people. They're up 24/7. You can go to it tomorrow. You can go to it next month. You can go to it next year. But it has a whole bunch of interesting things, so take a look at it when you have nothing better to do. Well, the way to get to it is to type into your browser, roy.ac2desk.com. We have a chat room. Sometimes it's very busy, sometimes it's very, very quiet. The way to get to the chat room is to go into your browser and type in the URL at the top, chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. Again, chat.ac2gs.com. I provide an audio stream through the internet of the technical net. Because a few people asked me to keep it live for the rest of the week, it's also a source of audio output from the Glen Oaks repeater. I try to keep it open 24/7. There's occasional times where it goes down, but if you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, that'll give you the audio stream. And as always, I like to remind people of MyKC2NJI has a great archive site called AmateurRadio.tv. It has over 1 million visitors, and it has archives of our Lymar technical nets going far back in September of 2006. So take a look at it. It offers the wisdom of amateur radio operators who have moved away from the area or passed away. So their wisdom is crystallized and frozen in time, so please avail yourself of it. Okay, let me drop one more time, and then I'll be back. Okay, trying my best not to time out the repeater, because a previous intro, I did that. I don't want to do that anymore. Anyway, we'll get to questions. I just wanted to add a little bit of additional information from last week's technical net. There was a discussion, Chris, K2 SDP, brought up the subject of trunking DMRs, and I am aware of DMRs, but I was not aware that there was a trunking option. My technical understanding was based on what was called Tier 1 and Tier 2 of DMR. Unbeknownst to me, and after a little bit of research, I realized that there was a Tier 3. Not really, it was actually started as a European concept. So Tier 3 is a trunking protocol that's kind of designed to use trunking protocols to extend the usability of DMR. It's kind of designed for when you're trying to make sense of anywhere from 100 to 1,000 A carriers, which is a lot of HD carriers. So, in ham surroundings, I don't think anyone really needs that kind of trunking. But it does exist. It's not available to the amateur radio DMRs because, as I said, it's a Tier 3 form of DMR, so you need a somewhat more expensive DMR radio that is includes capability for trunking. Anyway, so that's my short little expansion on the subject of trunking DMRs. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be back again. Okay, now's the time for the questions and the comments and the topics. If you're out there and you're so inclined, I would prefer at least if the first few questions, comments, topics be amateur radio related. As time goes on, as hopefully most people who live or know, we open it up for any fields of science and technology, and I'll try my best to give you an answer or at least give you a place where you can look for the answer. So with that in mind, I am requesting everyone out there who has any questions or topics or comments for the technical net to hit that push the talk button and give me their first name and their call sign.
What's that crackling in the background?
I do not know. Unlike Dick, I don't listen to my own audio signal because all of my antennas are too close together. And what happens is I desense any other radio in my area, so I can't really hear my own signal.
Right, no worries. But I got one thing in mind.
Okay, well, consider yourself on the top of the list, Craig. Anyone else want to join Craig on the list for tonight? Okay, well, maybe as time goes on, someone will have a question or a topic or a comment. Craig, what's yours tonight?
Kind of a tricky one, and I tried this a couple of times, and it's not really working for me, and I'm not finding resources. Windows XP. Do remote control that using remote desktop from another operating system. Windows 10.
Theoretically, I think you can. I think that Windows XP has some form of RDP, remote desktop protocol. I don't know. Sometimes in earlier forms of Windows, the professional version had it, but the basic or home version didn't. So the simple answer is I'm sure there are forms of Windows XP that have remote desktop protocol built into it. And if it does, then you'd be able to do that.
Do you want a comment?
Yes, comment.
Yes, if you can't get the natural remote desktop working from Windows 7, Windows 10, and so on, you can use VNC, Virtual Network Computing, freeware. I've used it on computers as far back as 22, 23 years ago, Windows 98, Windows 2000, 2000 Advanced Server. It's freeware. It's not super secure, as most computer users would like, but you need to conduct minor computer operations. That's the way to go.
Thank you very much. Yes, I use VNC also. I use it to get into my Raspberry Pi. It doesn't have as many bells and whistles as modern-day remote desktop systems, by. You can get most of the job done. It's small, it's fast, and it's written in just about any language that you can imagine. Like I said, I have it installed in my Raspberry Pi, but there are Unix versions, Linux versions, Apple versions, PC versions, all kind of versions. So if you can't get the RDC working, you might want to investigate BNC.
BN what? I'm looking it up right now.
Victor, Nancy, Charlie.
Virtual Network Computing, I believe. Is that what I'm looking for?
Yep, yep. I think that's what the initials stand for. It's all over the place, and you know, you name the computer, someone's written a version that works with it.
You can use this on Windows 10 to control Windows XP. Basically, display it on the Windows 10 desktop. Do whatever, record whatever.
Yep, yep, that should allow you to do that. Like I said, it's not quite as flashy as the newer version, so I'm sure there are some features in newer remote desktop protocols that do a little bit more, but it gets the job done.
I will give it a try. If I can find the right link for it. Wrong text spot. Might be it. All right, I could give it a try, I should be able to get it to work. I guess I just put it on one computer, and then I just load up the other computer. I don't have to have it on both, right? I just have it on the one that I want to initiate the control to.
You need to have a server on one and a client on the other so that they get handshake. There's nothing inherent in Windows that are just going to allow you, other than if you go through the RDC protocols, which are built into Windows. The BNC protocols aren't built into in any of your computers unless you install the software. So make sure at least one is the server and one is the client, and then that should work out fine.
Fair enough. And like I said before, I only just have to have it on one of the two, primarily like my main Windows 10 computer.
Again, you have to have a server VNC installed in one and a client VNC installed in the other. It's kind of like wanting to talk on the telephone. You need to have a telephone in both places. One telephone really isn't going to get you very far.
So that means I got to install it on both.
Yeah, yeah, that's the way pretty much all these remote desktop control devices work. You tunnel through ports, and you need a server on one side and a client on the other to translate the controls to operate remotely and to stream the graphics back to the computer that you're watching the other screen from.
All right, I'll give it a try. And what's that other one that you mentioned about that I'll also try in case it doesn't work out? So I want to first keep trying the remote desktop option, since they both have it. Otherwise, then I'll try that.
I'm not quite sure. Either the one that was being mentioned is a VNC. Again, it's very universal, very, very well-written, relatively small, not a lot of features, not a lot of bells and whistles, but it's free. But watch out, because there are companies that will charge you to use their version of it, but you can find it free if you look. The other thing I mentioned was the remote desktop protocol, RDP, which is the software built into most Windows. So you should have an RDP protocol installed in both of your Windows, XP and your Windows 10. It's just a matter of making sure that it was installed. You may need to toggle some setting in the Windows to reinstall it, because it may have not installed it on on it, the original setup, and then you could use RDP.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to see what I can get out of this. Thank you. That's it. AC2GS Net Control, KD2OGB.
Okay, you're welcome, Craig, and good luck with that. If you have any other problems with it, feel free to come back. Once again, I'm AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Limewalk Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 o'clock on to hopefully help with technical problems, answer questions, discuss topics, learn something, teach something, a little bit of everything. Anyone out there with any questions or comments or topics tonight, please hit that push the talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
And Tricia.
Wesley recognized. Welcome aboard, Wesley. We'll see if we have anyone else who wants to put their name on the list tonight. Anyone else, feel free, hit that push the talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
Whiskey 2 Henry, London.
Okay, Howard, recognized. I think the last time you and Wesley had the same order and there was a problem waiting too long. Do you have a time problem tonight, Howard?
No, no, but if I don't respond, just go on.
Okay, will do. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Please, hit that, push that button. Okay, nothing heard. Well, Beth, you're up next, Wes. So what's your comment, topic, or question tonight?
Good evening. Enter Exchange. I was in the office today. I wasn't drunk because a friend of mine couldn't come with me, and it was pretty boring. But anyhow, for a few weeks I was just interested with vertical antennas, multiband antennas, HF. And while I was there, I decided to buy a HF J350, that's by Comet. And vertical antenna, no radials, well, you need to ground. 3.5 megahertz to 50 megahertz, 9 bands, 75 watts. It's a small antenna, could be used indoor, actually, it's recommended to be used indoor, or at least with no direct rain on it. And before, the technet I was enjoying hours of recorded conversation of the guy named Dr. Roy. That I had my computer. I gained back access to my music, actually podcast program, which I forgot the password for it, so I was able to access it. It's called Pro Tools. But anyhow, a pretty amazing experience, again, to listen to it. So we have a T2LT antenna, and I know it was discussed, similar concept was discussed, not exactly the same one. You feel like give few words about it, I can give the direct description how do you think the antenna works. And then we can go to HFJ350, or we can start from that. Back to you.
Okay, we can talk about the TL2C. It's pretty much identical to the antenna that was explored. I think it was K6 NBC. He writes a lot of antenna articles for QSC. And it was an interesting article. WB2EAZ found it interesting too, and we kind of exchanged a couple of email messages and discussed it on a technical net. It's very interesting. It's basically a sleeved dipole that you wouldn't expect. It uses RT58 the same way that the QST article has. And what you basically do is you cut everything but the center wire of the coaxial cable for a quarter wavelength. Then you just kind of measure another quarter wavelength of the transmission line unchanged, and then you coil the remaining RG58 into a air core RF choke. So effectively, what you're trying to do is produce a dipole where one of the monopoles is the bare center feed wire, and the other one, interesting to me at least, is actually a common mode current that's going onto the outer aspect of the RG58 shield. So it's a dipole, but it's a very unobvious dipole. So that's kind of the gist that I got out of it. I was sort of hoping for further comments in the letters to the editor of QST, and I watched every month and never saw anything. So it didn't make that much of a splash, unfortunately.
Yeah, a few technical information. The guy who invented the antenna is from very, very small chain of islands, Tuvalu. It's disappearing land due to global weather change, the rising level of water, and gonna sink. The population is about 10,000 people. Yeah. So we have a piece of card. The 510 centimeters would be stripped from outer jacket. So we remove outer bright and plastic jacket about 540 centimeters in length, leaving only the electric pole. Of course, the dielectric pole has the inner wires in it. And we measure out the 10 centimeters of untouched cord, and we create a vertical line from there. At the bottom of the twice 510 centimeters, where the upper part is only dielectric, we have the same cord, which has 24 turns of cord around the 68 millimeters former. 68 millimeters would be in inches, 2.5 inches in 2.5 centimeters in inch. So it's a few inches of drain pipe, regular drain pipe that you can buy from the plumbing store, which would be the plastic, not metal. And the tail can be as long as you want, so we can have it long enough for our transceiver to be able to be terminated with PL259 or SO239, depends where you are in Europe or in United States of America or in England. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Okay, I mean, you kind of described it. You didn't really explain it. See, the trick is to figure out how the heck the damn thing radiates. And the way it radiates is that it uses a common mode current radiator as its other monopole. That's why you need the RF choke. That's what the coils of coaxial cable effectively are acting as, an RF choke, and stopping the common mode current at a quarter wavelength distance from where it starts out. That's how you get a quarter wavelength of common mode current and a quarter wavelength of the center wire current, and you have a dipole.
If we come back to the discussion about the vertical antennas with no radials, and you comment that there is no good antenna without the radials, I'm not fighting with that. But it's the antenna that was replicated by Mannheim radio operators. It gives you multi-band operation for entire HF, all bands will. Some people say that they got white, good SWR. Some people say they not. The one of the comment is, seem a very strange antenna, like a one-fourth wave single radiating element with no ground plane, just one-fourth piece of the wire with coax attached, with no counterpoise like the dipole or ground plane. I'm reading the comment. I may explain why I never could SWR on below 2.5 to 1, though clearly the same manage, some people manage 1.1 to 1. Imagine that it is very much a choke. The choke tell it where the end of the antenna is meant to be. I just do not see how coaxial should act as a part of radiating antenna unless it contains wanted slash necessary common mode current. Back to you, Dr.
Okay, first thing first, well, AC2GS. Second thing is, I don't know if it's you or me, but it seems like you're dropping out of the repeater every 2-3 seconds. So I only heard about one third of what you were saying because it's not that the audio was out and the carrier was there, but just everything was out. So I guess, don't know if it's me or you, but I couldn't really hear most of what you said.
Are you at? Okay, 1-2-3-4-5. 1-2-3-4-5. Is it good now?
Yeah, right now it was. Paul wanted to say something. Paul?
I just wanted to heard Wesley 100%. So, I guess it's not temporarily on your end, boy.
Oh, well, nothing much I can do with it from inside my shack, so we'll just have to deal with it as best we can. I don't know. Maybe propagation just is really bad tonight. Anyway, getting back to you, Wesley, I'm not quite sure what the question was. In the case of, me saying that for the most part, a counterpoise, that's for unbalanced antennas. For most unbalanced antennas, you need some form of a counterpoise. The only real exception that tends to be for a full half-wave monopole. And even then, you're using a bit of your coax cable as a kind of counterpoise. When you're talking about balanced antennas, you don't need counterpoises because they're balanced. And the GL2C is a version of a balanced antenna. It's a confusing balanced antenna.
To do with it, and it costs you nothing, and you want to have a new experience with an antenna and no radials, why don't you do it? That's all right.
Yeah, AC2GS, by the way, yeah, like I said, it's an interesting design, and one of the things that, and the K6NBC, I think it was, pointed out is that it's very portable. You can kind of fold it up and put it in a bag and take it out whenever you need it. His particular design was a wee bit different. He decided that you could have less coils of RG58 as the RF choke if you run them through a ferrite torus. As long as you don't get a big, heavy ferrite torus. The weight that you save from multiple turns, the cost of the ferrite weight is saved in the weight loss of far less turns of the coax cable. But that's the only difference between your version that I saw on QSC. It's one of those things that you could put up very easily. It's not very strong. You're depending upon the structural integrity of the center wire. If you don't have RG58, does not have a very thick center wire, so it might not be the strongest mounting system. But worst comes to worst, you get another length of RG58 and you make another one. Doesn't really take much time.
Before we go to the next antenna that I have purchased, there is a comparison. So T2LT, this type of design is the main concept behind the quarter wave stereo gain master. So you can put to Google one half wave plus /2 wave stereo gain master. The 5/8 version that matching stop, same thing though I'm reading it right, stick one off on the fiberglass pole and away you go. Obviously it won't work as well as Gain Master, because the coax is not red. Okay, kind of jokey comment. But anyhow, I did Google that, and it opened up for me Gain Master antenna, professional. What it says is 0.625 lambda center feet, omnidirectional, vertical polarization. This one is actually from 25 to 30 megahertz, but it's 500 watts. So it's mainly for 10 meters. But I assume that those antennas are for either monoband, anyband, or multiband, but I don't see anything that says about multiband. However, it explains pretty much the solid version of the same concept. Back to you.
Okay. Like I said, because it's just a unique variation on standard dipoles. Dipoles are without traps or any kind of tricks into them. Usually are monobanders. So the stereo Gain Master you're alluding to is basically a monoband. For 10 meters, you can adjust stereos. I have a stereo myself. I use the 5/8 wave vertical on Sunday mornings for my 10-meter net. And usually they have little adjustable sliding whips at the very tip that you can bend it to be a little bit longer and use it for CV.
Okay. So the next antenna, if anybody has any questions, enter a sheet. Okay. Comet HFJ350. Gain Comet HFJ350. Sirius portable telescopic antenna, multiband, that brings new flexibility. I'm reading supportable operations. The combination is 3 square root 5 half. I don't know how to understand that. It's just 3.5 to 50, but then it says, it's a Python. 7 to 50. Okay. 7 to 50. The length 14.57 feet. I'm sorry, not feet, inches. Maximum 15.39 inches. The weight approximately That antenna, bought it for curiosity, it's cheap. $120, I found the lowest price is $109.99, directly from DX Engineering. I believe that those are quite knowledgeable people, making a lot of antennas. I wonder if you had a contact with them, or what do you think about them? Interesting.
Well, I mean, DX Engineering doesn't make any of these antennas. They're just retailers for them. This is a Comet design. Comet says I have nothing wrong with the brand. I have a GP3 and a GP6. Failed, unfortunately. But fortunately, since the GP3 is still working, that's how I'm talking to you right now. So I have nothing particularly wrong with Comet. You know, there are designs and there are designs. And this is an extreme compromise design. And even though it's an extreme compromise design, at least on DX Engineering, they do not suggest to use this on 160 meters. They describe it as a 9-band antenna system, 80, 40, 30, 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, and 6. It is basically just a glorified adjustable ham stick. It has an adjustable whip, which is always pretty much going to be too short, and then it has two attachable inductors. Probably one is for, you need to gang up both of them for the 80 meters, and because of the increase in the inductor and the heat dissipation, that's why it has a lower power rating. And then there are plugs that short out parts of the inductor depending upon what band you're trying to use. Let me drop for a sec. So basically, this is a adjustable, shortened quarter wave with a loading coil. You need to supply some form of a counterpoise for it, and the nature of shortened antennas are that their Qs become very, very high, and their bandwidth becomes very, very narrow, so you probably need some kind of tuner nearby to fix that. In addition, there's something we talked about many times in the past. It's a term called radiation resistance. You want your antenna to have a large relative radiation resistance. What that is your antenna dissipates energy in the form of radio waves, and so they can be considered in the same way that any resistance produces waste heat, but radiation resistance produces radio waves, which we want. So the more we dissipate our energy in the form of radio waves, the less we dissipate it in heat, the more efficient the antenna. When you try to run this type of antenna in 80 meters, I would be surprised if it runs anything more than 1 to 2% efficient. At 160, if you could get it to do that, which probably you couldn't, it would be less than 1%. So, you know, I mean, it's better than nothing, and it'll be an interesting experiment to see to work with. You know, these things are interesting. You'll see how it works. But the efficiency of ham sticks, you know, what I kept on usually saying about this with radiation resistance is if ham sticks were so great, and a lot of people love them, and great, wonderful, then contest people would just have ham sticks. There would be no reason for their monoband Yagis arrayed and phased and all kinds of fun stuff. So there's got to be something a little bit less efficient about a ham stick. So, although it looks like a fun antenna, and I hope you get a lot of fun out of it, you know, an efficient antenna design, it ain't.
Yeah. Viking head to Xian. Found QRZ review on it. They show it with ICOM 705. Just think what you think about the radio. But before we go to that, they say 10 band, 1.8 to 50. What is that? Right. Okay. Quarter wave base loading type antenna. They recommend 50 watts at 1.8. 50 watts at 1.8, 75 watts on 80 meters, and 100 watts from 7 to 50. Oh. Impedance 50 ohms, length 270 millimeter minimum, and maximum about 2 meters. The 2 meters would be 6 feet. But not much. They didn't say much about it. I wonder why. So what do you think about the ICOM 705?
705 is a very nice piece of equipment. I've often kind of wondered, wouldn't it be nice to just kind of play with one? But I've not gone down that road. It's one of those all-in-one FCRs that are really QRP devices. They're in line with Yaesu has a QRP radio that's very similar. Elecraft has a high-end KX series that has those feature sets. So I like the specs of 705. I don't really find that I have a place for it in my shack right now, but I always keep my eye on it. It's pretty popular. There's a battery pack that goes with it. If you use the battery pack, it's not capable of, the current load to give you 10 watts. So the battery pack gives you 5 watts of output. If you plug it into a proper power supply, with enough current behind it, you can get it up to 10 watts without amplification.
Yeah, I did see that antenna at the Hampus with exactly this, the transceiver with that antenna at the Hampus with probably no propagation today during the daytime. The guy was able to find only CW at 20 meters and nothing else but that. But when we're talking about this kind of antennas, there is another antenna, Chameleon. I'm not sure if I pronounce it properly. C-H-A-M-E-L-E-O-N. Chameleon. C-H-A-M-P-A-S 2.0, CHAMPAS 2.0, portable ham radio antenna system. And when I'm going, the vertical, horizontal, flopper, inventory, what they say? Oh, it's a modular portable antenna. It could serve at the balcony. It could be vehicle stationary. And it works from 6 meters to 160 meters. And it has 100 watts single sideband. It is made out of a military style stick that you can quickly put on and put back with some sort of swivel with wire in it, connection that it takes not much of, it fits into the suitcase. I wonder if you ever came across it, of that antenna that you raised. And to Xia.
Yes, I did. You know how much it cost?
No, I have no idea.
It goes for $600, but they throw in the shipping. It's a military grade kind of build your own antenna. There's a lot of wire and plastic and wood and poles, They advertise that you could install it as a vertical, as a horizontal, as a slope, or as an inverted V, as an inverted L, as a near vertical incident skyway, and as a vehicle device. So it's kind of like an antenna kit as opposed to just an antenna.
How much did you say it's the price?
$600.
Unbelievable. As a matter of fact, I bought a toy, which is not really the ham radio, but it's very good if you at home. It's a Multimaster. The most expensive they had also $600 with that. Multimaster, it's a fine. And with two batteries on it, pretty much as I waited. But anyhow, coming back. So you say $600. For $600, I can buy Yagi and Turk Shein.
Yes, you can. I mean, for a lot less, you can probably buy a Yagi. But you know, there's a couple things. Number one, now, Chameleon is a pretty good brand name. Their specialty is that they do not sell flimsy antennas. Well, pretty much everything I've ever seen them try and sell are pretty much military spec. So these are not things that fall apart. This is not a MFJ territory by far. And you pay a hefty premium for military spec equipment. And as I said before, this is not just kind of one antenna. This is kind of build your own antenna with, you know, with all kinds of accessories where you put the feed point at the end and make it an end fed. You can put it in the middle and make it a dipole. You can do all kinds of things. You make slopers, as I mentioned before. There are supports. So this is a kind of antenna kit system as opposed to just an antenna. It's meant again, for kind of either military or pseudo-military, where you wear the damn thing on your back and you go walking into a park or on a mountaintop and you build your own antenna and you activate the park or the mountain or such. This is not really designed for home installation, from what I perceive. It's a little overkill for home operation.
What do you think ham radio operators could pay for $600 for multibander?
You could go down a laundry list as far as multibanders. Fan dipoles cost less than $200. There's an interesting design for an antenna that I've been looking at because someone on my other technical net was thinking about it. I'm blocking on the name. He's an English guy, and it's a very interesting novel design. Instead of a fan dipole, which is what I tend to favor, he has designed and he's selling what amounts to fan quarter wave verticals. So he has an extendable mast. He strings up a series of wires at one quarter wavelength, and he runs counterpoise and radials at the base. And he's been able to get it from, I think, 10 meters to 40 meters. He has a design where there's a center loading coil that lets the 40-meter element operate at 80 meters. That kind of gets up to about $500-$600. But there's lots of different designs for multiband. I find fan dipoles to be the simplest approach and the least expensive. And a lot of people can kind of make their own. It doesn't take rocket science.
Thinking about multibanders, EX Commander, classic, but this one goes from 40 to 2 meters. I'm not sure if that is quite good happy for happy ham radio operators design, because my Kenwood 2000, I have two of them. They have a separate PL connector for 2 meters and for HF. So if you have one antenna, then you have to deal with it. I'm not sure about the other designs. I have only Kenwood. Back to you.
Well, if you were interested in using, yeah, DX Commander was the one that I was thinking of. He sells a whole bunch of different ones with different ranges. You could either put it through a diplexer and get out the VHF signal, or you don't necessarily have to install it as directed, and you can let the two meter elements not be connected to the rest of them and have a separate antenna line going down from there.
Yes, as some listeners noticed, we're talking about vertical antenna only. There is a DX Commander Classic that has also 80 meters. So imagine that you have 80 meters and 2 meters in one. It is good for one and a half kilowatts. No kidding. 1.5 kilowatt on vertical antenna. Am I reading it right? Enter XGN.
I think depending upon the duty cycle, yeah. But it's a good piece of wire, so it should be able. There's no gamma matches. There's nothing that's going to soak up energy. There's no balance and such. It's a very simple design. Now, the 80-meter version of that, you have to look very closely because it's not built into the antenna proper. What it is a part of an inverted L design. So if you want to truly get 80 meters out of that DX Commander that's supposed to work with 80 meters, you have to extend a further piece of wire beyond the top of your antenna and to have enough length of it so that it makes up the rest of the required length to be a decent 80 meter. And because some of it is going to have the quality of not a vertical but a horizontal, that element of the L, it's not going to be as good a DX antenna for 80 meters as if it was just a purely vertical, which they also sell. It's an extended length, and again, it has the inductor coil. But the DX Commander, as far as I recall, requires you to install another segment as part of an inverted L arrangement for 80 meters.
Thank you for that explanation. What I found is DX Commander shacks runs on 80, 40, 30, 20, 17, 12, and 10, 6, 4. 4 meters is European, 2 meters. So European, they have, sorry, it happened like 3 years ago, right? They opened 4 meters.
No, as far as I'm aware, when I started out in this hobby, 4 meters was a thing in Europe. So it's been around for at least 11 years, probably a lot longer.
Okay, thank you very much for the correction. The 15-meter band is shattered for the means of resonating the 40-meter antenna and uses what we call boomerang. Fallback. Yeah, you are talking about to achieve the 0.58 on the 15-meter band. No tuner is required. How wide is that antenna?
Not terribly wide. I mean, if you really think about it, it's basically the thickness of the pole going up, and then there's some clamp that surrounds it that is probably about, I don't know, 8 inches in diameter maybe, give or take, and they have holes drilled in them, and the wires run through the many holes. So it doesn't take up a lot of, it's not a thick antenna. It's just, probably, again, something on the order of 8 or 9 inches thick when you count all the retaining plastic rings that keep the wires in place.
The AWR below 1.5 to 1, so you could have even transistor amplifiers that would be happy with it. I assume tubes are more forgivable, but you weren't using tubes for a long time, I believe, Dr. Roy.
Vacuum tube?
Correct.
No, I don't have any vacuum tube equipment here at all. Most of my equipment, with the exception of the John May rest in peace's bird watt meter, was manufactured after the beginning of the 21st century. My amplifier is LDMOS technology, solid state.
Okay, that's all that I have for today for those antennas. One thing that I recalled, I have a piece of recording of your conversation with Dick long time ago, but it wasn't recorded from the beginning of it, so I just caught on part of the sentence which says the total amount of energy in universe is growing up. And I was, what? Maybe you can recall that. Back to you.
I don't remember that exact conversation. The last time I talked about that on the technical net, there was a very curious fellow who came on and talked about FCC obscenity rules, who felt that me suggesting that the laws of conservation of energy are violated in extreme situations was an obscenity, I guess. But that was one of my many chats with Dick that I enjoyed immensely about quantum mechanics. Theoretically, you know, the law of conservation of mass energy is that it's set. You can neither create it nor destroy it. But if you think in terms that the universe, we're told, expands as time goes on, you can describe it as a scaling factor or just the size gets bigger, the volume gets bigger. Then when you superimpose the fact that according to quantum mechanics, there is no such thing as a zero energy level, and everything has to have a non-zero value, the vacuum of space itself has a non-zero energy value. So obviously, if you're making more vacuum of space, you're going to be making more vacuum energy, which the total energy of the universe would seem to be going up, as opposed to staying the same. This particular gentleman disagreed with me. His evening was a wee bit obscure, and unfortunately no one really emails me any reference material, so I have nothing to go on as far as he's concerned, but this seemed to be a violation in extreme cases. Laws of physics often kind of break under extreme circumstances.
You got to the area of science section of the TechNet, and I assume it's too early for that yet. The interesting was that I was listening to the pieces of music where you can create the music. So the program is Pro Tools, and this program collected all of the pieces of recorded sound. And I found you in it. I never use drugs. I don't know how it works. Maybe somebody knows. But and Dick, when I was listening to it, you guys act like something you cannot stop. It's just like that tourist for more. I know it's a pass. I should just switch it off, do other things, prepare myself for the TechNet, but they couldn't. Enter it here.
Well, you know, one of my favorite things was to talk with Dick about these things. He had a fascinating mind, and he had an incredible curiosity about things. And he had an open mind about them as well. So, you know, when I would try to explain that as far as I was aware, electrons did not have diameters. So far, measurements don't tell you what the diameter of an electron is. It tells you that it can't be larger than the lower limit
of the measuring devices that they've used, and that they appear to be point charges in space. They do not have a dimension. They have no diameter. They're point charges. Some people would say, but you know, Dick sort of tried to embrace it, wrap his head around it. It was loads of fun. I remember talking to John about entanglement.